Armed militia groups are surging across the nation, and police officers are one of the major groups joining them. In this video, we're going to take a look at the explosion in popularity among right-wing militias, why law enforcement officers are fast becoming their number one recruits, and what it all means for the rise of a new conservative age. You're not going to want to miss this. Greetings, everyone. Dr. Steve here with you. Great to be with you, as always. If this is your first time here at this channel, I post two videos a day analyzing current events, analyze some super awesome conservative trends so you can live in the present in light of even better things to come. So if you haven't already done so, you know what to do. Make sure to smack that subscribe button. I see the bell is gone for whatever reason. It'll be an absolute privilege to have you as a regular part of this channel as we together, each and every day, celebrate the collapse of left-wing globalism and the unstoppable rise of a new conservative age. So let's begin with our video chat question of the day. Do you support the rise of armed militias in our nation? Let us know in the comments section below. Do you support the rise of armed right-wing militias? Let us know what you think, because frankly, regardless of whether or not you support them, reports are coming out that they are surging in membership throughout the nation. And we're going to take a look at not only that surge, but also the extraordinary alliance that's growing between militias and law enforcement. It's pretty amazing stuff. But first, before you do anything else, make sure to click on that link below and head on over to my special website for My Patriot Food Supplies. We saw with the whole pandemic insanity, we cannot wait for an emergency to happen before we respond to one. And no one makes preparing for an emergency more ridiculously easy and affordable than My Patriot Supply. Gang, they're simply the best. Their food kits last up to 25 years in storage. They include breakfasts, lunches, and dinners. And best of all, they got a guarantee policy that will knock your socks off. And if you act now, you can save $100 off a full 4-week emergency food supply when you click on the link below to my special website. You heard that, right? 100 smackers off. So don't wait. I've got my food supply. Make sure you get yours. Click on that link below or go to preparewithsteve.com and save $100 off your very own 4-week emergency food supply today. All right, gang, let's dive right in here. We've got some significant developments in the reorganization, the realignment that's going on in our nation in a post-riot reality. Not only are we seeing armed right-wing militias surging across the nation, but now cops, policemen, are joining those militias. I don't know if you noticed, but one of the fascinating animosities that actually completely disappeared as a result of these riots was the traditional animosity between police and militia members. The far-left site The Intercept recognized this to their own disappointment, but they were shocked to find that the race riots had created a new bromance between right-wing militia groups and police forces. Here is an example of the kind of camaraderie we've been seeing between armed militias and the police.
You guys too.
Hey, you guys mind if we say a prayer?
Now, you'll notice immediately here, these are not white supremacist groups, right? Contrary to so much of what we hear and read in our fake news mainstream Marxist media, you see blacks, you see Latinos, as part of these armed militias. It's part of the growing populism that's self-surging all across our nation. And it sees the world not so much as left versus right or Democrat versus Republican, but rather people versus the political class, the ruled versus the ruling class, who they're seeing as ruling according to their own benefit, not the benefit of those they claim to represent. And one of the manifestations of this is an armed populism or an armed populist resistance that simply doesn't buy into the tribalist and cultural Marxist vision of Black Lives Matter and their cheerleaders among our elite media class. And so it's no surprise that we're seeing a new coalition building of sorts between law enforcement, who've of course been thrown under the bus by left-wing mayors and governors who've sided with the rioters and looters. We're seeing a coalition building between law enforcement on the one hand and right-wing militias, the armed populist resistance on the other. Now, this attraction of police to militias has already been going on even before the riots. There have been a number of articles reporting on the fact that indeed thousands of both active and retired law enforcement officers have joined militia organizations over the last few years. And we can only imagine that that number is swelling at the moment, given how lawmakers were so quick to disavow the police and start spewing out their defund and disband nonsense. This entire anti-cop culture that's so pervasive among the left is not only, it's just surging militias across the nation. It's a surge that's been going on, however, for some time now. Back in 2017, PBS did a report highlighting a noticeable surge in armed militia activity and membership. Today, there are over 500 militia groups in the United States, more than double the number in 2008. You have groups such as the 3% Militia, one of the nation's largest armed right-wing groups. Their name, interestingly enough, comes from the notion that only about 3% of colonialists fought in the Revolutionary War, but were still able to overwhelm and defeat the major superpower of the time, the British Empire. You've got the 3% Militia. They have chapters in virtually every single nation, every single state in the nation. You've got the Oath Keepers. Again, what PBS noticed too is that many of their members are indeed current and former law enforcement, as well as military personnel who fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. So you may have heard of the Oath Keepers because they were the ones that showed up in Ferguson, Missouri, right? During the riots back then, the Michael Brown riots back in 2015, which, if I recall, actually started the whole Black Lives Matter movement. But Oath Keepers came to Ferguson to help provide security for reporters working for Alex Jones' InfoWars. You have the Sovereign Citizens Movement. I mean, we could go on and on. But for me, what is key here at understanding this new bromance between armed militias and law enforcement is that it's all part of the continued political realignment going on in our nation today, which has been going on now for the last several years. Again, this is a political realignment that's going on actually quite literally all over the world, but it obviously has its own particular manifestation here in the United States, as it does, you know, in all the different places in the world. Broadly speaking, the political realignment that we're seeing is what scholars call a populist realignment. So what we have to understand here is that populism is a different kind of political paradigm that we've been used to over the last, say, several decades. So, I mean, simply put, the paradigm that increasingly defines our politics is no longer organized around a partisan animosity between Democrats versus Republicans, or right versus left, or even ideologically conservative versus ideologically liberal, big government versus small government. Instead, the new political paradigm that's dominating our nation is one organized around the new animosity between the people versus the elite political class. It's a clash between the ruled versus the rulers. And so what characterized populists is a deep-seated suspicion, indeed a radical hostility and animosity towards our elite class, our political, corporate, media, Hollywood, university elites, who are seen as ruling for their own benefit, for their own gain, rather than for the benefit of those they claim to represent. Populists are united by the notion that the customs, cultures, and traditions of a nation are best preserved when taken out of the hands of the ruling corrupt elite and placed back in the hands of ordinary citizens. That's the new political paradigm that's emerging all over the world, and it's in response to globalism, which is governed by a globalist elite, who are technically known in scholarly literature as the expert class. It's a class of technocrats who supposedly have the expertise to govern a single worldwide political and economic system, which we popularly know today as globalism. Now, as part of this political paradigm shift, you're regular to this channel, you know that we've been analyzing how these race riots spread across this nation are in fact politically and socially realigning our nation into two fundamentally different groups marked by two different regional or geographical organizations. So on the one side, you have the increasingly tribalistic ethno-nationalist wing that's occupying both our cities as well as our political elite. So this is the pro-Black Lives Matter movement that's fundamentally ethno-nationalist. It's overtly racist, tribalist. They want to return to segregationist conditions where people are deliberately reorganized according to their race, with blacks and non-whites in general receiving preferential treatment to counter the supposed evils of so-called white privilege and systemic racism. So you've got that along with the cultural Marxists in our political class, our political leaders, our CEOs, our corporations, our Hollywood elite, our media elite, our university professors are all advocates of radical tribalism, but more in the name of this cultural Marxist understanding of the world. So that's one side of the conflict. On the other side of the conflict, in effect, you have everybody else. You have everyone and anyone who doesn't bind to this resurgent tribalism or cultural Marxism. And this group is particularly characterized by white working class voters who live in the suburbs and the exurbs. So remember, this is the constituency that gave Trump the election in 2016. So during the primaries, Trump won more than 150 counties, where at least 8 in 10 people were whites without college degrees, working class voters. And then in the election itself, it was actually even more stunning in states like Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. We talked about this on a number of occasions. You had nearly 200 counties who defected from their unbroken pattern of voting for the Democratic presidential candidate. Nearly 200 counties that voted for the Democratic presidential candidate by a 20-point margin in every single presidential election since Walter Mondale back in 1984, they switched and voted for Trump by a comparable 20-point margin. It represented a 40-point shift, which was utterly stunning. Make no mistake, this voting base is being energized right now like never before because of these riots. And as a result, we're seeing new coalitions forming, new bromances, as it were, between what would have otherwise been hostile groups, in this case, armed militias and law enforcement. And so I think this new alliance has been a microcosm of the larger macrocosmic alliances that are forming that signal a surging populist movement that in many respects is only just beginning. Now, before you go, you will definitely want to check out the video I just uploaded on a Democrat state senator actually getting attacked by a left-wing mob. The infighting the left has begun, and it is all but guaranteeing a Republican landslide in November. You're not going to want to miss it, so make sure to click on the link, and I will see you over there. God bless, and have a wonderful weekend.
My fellow Americans, my name is John Mark, and in this video, I'm going to deliver to you a somber message. Civil War II in America has already begun, and there's only one way to stop it. I don't want to get into a geeky argument about whether the war has already begun. I just want to point out that some of the things that you would look at historically in past wars that you can look back in hindsight and say, you know what, the war really started then. Some of those events and those types of events have already occurred here in America. So wars and conflicts start when both sides want the same stuff. In this case, the left is demanding basically that white people and that American society give a bunch of free stuff. It's kind of vague demands, but it's basically you owe us a bunch of stuff. You have to give us free stuff. I mean, we heard the founder of BET Television say, oh, there should be, I forget how many trillions of dollars transferred from the American people, and specifically from white people is what they really mean, to non-white people. And there's a critical mass of white people and of some non-white people as well, just Americans, that say, no, we don't owe you anything. And so both sides want the same stuff. You know, they're fighting over that pot of money, basically. So the conflict is set up. Then a trigger event has occurred. That was the George Floyd thing. I'm not going to go into why that was a trigger event for the left, but it was a trigger event for the left, and it set them off. You also look historically, wars start when one side overtly aggresses, especially when it starts to be on a wide scale. It could be one big event, or it could be a wide scale. You look at World War II, obviously, something like Pearl Harbor, okay? When the left started burning down cities and basically said, we're going to destroy stuff until you start giving us stuff, that's, you know, overt aggression. when one side makes demands, and especially when the other side refuses to meet them. Now, we have some corporations saying, yeah, we're going to donate money to these causes. If you think that's actually going to help the situation, I've got a nice bridge to sell you. But the left is making demands. They're kind of vague demands, but it's basically, we demand free stuff from people that are quote-unquote oppressing us. The other side is saying, we're not oppressing you. You're just little children who need to grow up. There's no compromise here. All hope of compromise on both sides has basically disappeared. If you still think there can be some kind of a compromise, where, and when I say compromise, I mean one side giving in to the demands of the other, that's, nobody believes that. Nobody really believes that the right wing is going to give in. Nobody really believes that the left wing is going to give in. Let's just talk about the situation a little bit more, then we'll talk about the only possible solution. The left has imported millions of people from less successful countries, less successful areas of the world. And I'm not saying this to be mean or anything. I mean, it's just, this is obvious. This is why they want to come to the West, because they feel they have a better opportunity for success, but they're status starved. And they know that the non-white people groups on average are less successful financially than the white folks. Everybody's very aware of this. Human beings are extremely tuned into their status, including their group's status. And so I use the term status starved, and I don't mean it as an insult. I think it's very understandable. The left also has a lot of people, especially single white women, that have a huge amount of empathy for these status-starved people. Single white women with no children, if you look at their voting patterns, if you look at the political opinion surveys, you can basically see that they're treating these non-white folks as their children mentally and emotionally. The left truly believes that these less successful people groups are oppressed. They truly believe that the right wing is pure evil. And they have, as I said, some very vague demands, which is basically white people owe us a bunch of stuff. And they seem to truly believe that if white people just throw trillions of dollars at them, that everything's going to be fixed, which I disagree with, but that's what they really think. The right wing has lost all hope of compromise with the left. They've lost all hope of talking to the left, of teaching the left anything. The right wing has lost basically all the institutions. Even Trump either can't do much or won't do much. Sometimes it's hard to tell which. The right has a hard time believing that their enemy, the left, is really this dumb, that they think that, you know, the differences between people groups are only because of oppression, and that throwing trillions of dollars at them is actually going to help. And the right wing views the left's deeply felt grievance of, you're oppressing us, you've oppressed us. Now, of course, in the past, there was oppression. That's what makes this a little bit more messy and gives the left more authority, especially in their own minds. But the right wing says, listen, that's over. You know, and most right wingers look at themselves personally and say, I haven't done anything to hurt anybody or hold anybody back. And now you're calling me evil and you're saying I owe you all this stuff? Heck no. So the right wing views the enemy's grievance as a lie, but the left really deeply feels that grievance. And right wingers, you need to understand this. The left is, they are true believers. I'm talking about the grassroots. I'm not talking about some of the politicians that are just playing political games. I'm talking about the grassroots. They truly, truly are true believers in this stuff. This is why you can't talk to them. And the right wing just truly does not, the left needs to understand, the right wing truly does not believe that these people groups are oppressed, because they look around the world and they say, listen, white people don't have some kind of magical tentacles that stretch around to every third world area of the world and make it third world. These people are third world all on their own, just fine. And they're not saying it to be mean. They want people to succeed, but they're not going to just accept something that they believe is a lie, that everything is white people's fault. Let's talk about the system, because it's not just a people problem. We have a lot of very different people in America, especially left and right. I mean, obviously, I'm oversimplifying a little bit. There's more than just left and right. We all know that. But it does roughly divide into that, even scientifically. So you've got a lot of different kinds of people, and the system is not set up correctly or wisely to allow a lot of different types of people. It's very hard to get a lot of different types of people to live together and work together under the same system anyway, which is really the main point of everything that I'm saying. The problem with the system is we have a winner-takes-all democracy. Everybody's fighting at the federal level for who gets to dominate 330 million people and the rules that those 330 million people live under. It's absolutely ludicrous. The system is ludicrous. The Founding Fathers never intended a big federal bureaucracy and a big federal political fight every 2 years, every 4 years. They envisioned the states being basically their own nations, is probably the way we would say it today, with like a loose, what we would consider today, a loose union at the federal level to enable trade and, you know, defend the landmass and this stuff. And that's really what we're recommending a return to, with some more specific tweaks to match the way that the places that people live and their political views where they already are. So at the state level, you see the urban versus suburban and rural divide. Suburbs sometimes are a mix, but obviously you get my point. There's huge conflict within the states because the urban areas are leftist. People are self-sorting. They live where they want to live. Even in the big cities, you know, you have these big companies that might have a big building downtown, but you got a lot of people that work at those companies that actually drive in from the suburbs. And so you got this divide. Our current system, because it's a winner-takes-all system at both the federal and the state level, it guarantees conflict. There are no solutions that are possible within the current system. Now, I'm not saying the entire system is, you know, we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. For example, in the West, we have pretty decent rule of law compared to most places, which is why one of the big reasons that we have first world quality of life. But you get my point. These certain aspects of the system make it absolutely impossible for any solution to actually occur while this current system is in place. And you say, well, that sounds kind of revolutionary. It's not actually revolutionary. What was revolutionary is over the past however many years and decades, when we went away from the way the Founding Fathers set it up, which was more local level power. See, we're just returning to the original Constitution in this regard, which that original setup was much, much wiser. The current system also incentivizes and empowers the worst political leaders, both on the right and the left. These people are corrupt scum. They don't care about us at all. We all know this. All of our legislation is written by corporate lawyers. The big corporations own all of the politicians on both sides. Anybody that comes in from the outside, like a Trump or a Bernie, they were not able to screw over Trump. They were able to screw over Bernie twice. But the people want something different. Trump and Bernie prove that. Okay? And the system really screws over both the right and the left grassroots. So there is actually a common cause on the grassroots right and left in this fact that the system does not serve us and our leaders are not serving us, because the system attracts the worst kind of people. Good people are actually disgusted by trying to be a political leader in the current environment, in the current system. The founders of the United States, you say what you will about them, but these parts were absolute wisdom. They never wanted a winner-takes-all federal level, you know, blood sports politics every 2 to 4 years. They did not want that. That's just dumb. They never wanted a huge federal bureaucracy. They never wanted bankers bringing money into existence. There's absolutely no reason you are paying interest on your mortgage or on your car loan. They said explicitly, do not let bankers bring your money, control your money supply and bring your money into existence. So the problem is, now we have a situation created by a departure from these certain pearls of wisdom from the Founding Fathers and just a broken and flawed system that has developed. The good news, though, is that all that is necessary to fix the problem is to change the system in certain ways that basically dissipates these problems completely. We know how to do this now. This is what we are proposing. You say the elites aren't going to like that. Of course they're not going to like that. But you know what? The grassroots level people don't like the elites. And if leaders don't actually serve their people, those leaders deserve to be replaced with leaders that actually will serve the people in a system that will serve the people. And we're not proposing, and I'm not proposing, completely get rid of the Constitution, change everything. We're talking about changing certain aspects of the system to go back to the way it was originally set up. And it can be done. How do you fix it? You start by knowing what system changes to make. Now, this is actually a more difficult problem than you would think, but it has been solved. It has been solved by a man named Kurt Doolittle, a very successful tech entrepreneur who has a track record of his entire life building companies. He was not born rich, building companies, selling them. Every company he started, he knew which company he was going to sell that company to before he started it. All right, this guy is at 160 something. I don't know what his IQ is. He's a genius. And the reason it's hard, the reason nobody else has really come out with, you know what, let's change the system, this, and it's like layer after layer of system changes that dissipate the problem, is because it requires thinking outside the box, and everybody's too busy getting angry at each other to even sit down and think. And you got Kurt Doolittle, who's been thinking about this stuff, studying this stuff, writing this stuff down, developing it, putting it in a coherent fashion for years, and it's ready now. So once you know what system changes to make that will dissipate the problem and make everybody happier, except for a handful of elites, so make the left way happier, make the right way happier. Basically, what we're proposing is you left-wingers live where you already live, and you can run things however you want without the right wing having any effect over you, and vice versa. So there's some people out there already, and it's good that there are people getting wind of this. It's not good that they're lying about it, but it's a sign that people are getting wind of it. There's people already lying about this, saying, you want to trap us in our cities. We've never said that. We never said it that way. We're not saying you can't travel and do tourism to, I don't know, Yellowstone National Park. We never said you couldn't do that. You're like trapped there. You live there already. What we're saying is you can run the place the way you want, where you already live, left-wingers. And yes, the other areas will have the right to say, you know what, we're not going to accept immigrants from leftist areas, and vice versa. The left can say, we're not going to accept right-wingers who want to come and move in here. You can set up whatever rules you want. But we're not going to trap you there and say you can't travel and you can't do business and you can't do tourism. We never said that. Stop lying. So you have to know what system to change is to make, and then you have to popularize it, and you have to market it, you have to share it around. That's what we're doing. That's the phase we're in. That's what we're launching with our July 4th event. You popularize the system changes, and you discuss them. You have to know what to do, and then you have to share the solution so people can talk about it, learn about it. And if people have different ideas, well, I don't know about this particular thing, that particular thing, but the general idea of what we're sharing makes perfect sense. It's the only solution, and every person with half of a brain that comes across it knows it. And then, you know, once people know about it, then they have to choose. The leaders have to choose. They're making their bed, and they're going to lay in it. The people have to choose. They're making their bed, and they're going to lay in it. And that choice is going to determine whether there's a war or not. Because if you think there's a way to avoid a war without a solution like this, you are lying. Neither side is going to give in. The only solution is to separate geographically. There's a common sense way to do it where everybody will be happier. And this choice is necessary, as I said, because war has already started for all practical intents and purposes. And sometimes you see this in wars where like one side will start aggressing, you know, or acting out against another side based on a grievance. And the other side kind of sits there and says, maybe we can talk to them, maybe we can avoid it somehow, maybe there's another way, and then eventually they realize there isn't. And the war, you know, it becomes more and more obvious that there's no other way and it's just a war. That's the kind of the stage we're in. The right wing is like, is there any other way? You know, what if we can get Trump elected again? Even if you get Trump elected again, it's not going to work, because if you look at my bullet point here, soon the right wing is not going to win any more national elections just because of immigration. Because non-whites vote more than 2-1 left wing. That's just the facts. Texas has turned purple, folks. It's basically purple now. Still probably, you know, will go Trump in the 2016 election if there is one. But when Texas goes blue, it's over. What do you think the right wing is going to do when that happens? They're going to have no incentive to play the political game in the current system anymore. And the right knows what's going to happen if the left wins all these elections and rules over them. The left says it straight out. We will get revenge on you. We will punish you. The right knows that the left views them as pure evil. The right knows that the left gives themselves moral authority to harm the right and white people. The right knows this. There is no chance of a fix in the current system because the current system has no way of mitigating or releasing the tension of this conflict. That's why the system has to be changed. So the solution is, you know, the only chance of peace, the only chance to avoid war is a set of system changes that we propose, that I was just talking about. At our July 4th event in Richmond, Virginia, that we're calling the Declaration of Reformation, we are putting forth the only hope for peace in America. The only hope for the left, because, you know, the left has a hard time accepting this, but they cannot win in a war against the right wing. This is exceedingly obvious. You can watch my video that has 1.8 million views, Civil War II in America, who would win? What we're basically saying is sane people unite. We don't care what part of the political spectrum you're on. If you don't want a war, let's unite to figure out a solution that will avoid a war. We're not going there to start a fight. We're going there to avoid one. What we propose, practical terms of peace that will actually enable us to live peacefully, is supremely reasonable. If you look at it, I'm not going to get into the details. I'm going to do my next video where I go into some of the key components of what we're proposing so people can start to think about it, etc. And that's what we're really doing, is we're starting a conversation around this at this event. But what we're proposing, and you can nitpick about details, et cetera, no problem. What we're proposing is supremely reasonable. Now, sometimes people go into some of the documents and they say, well, you're talking about this happening and that happening that would be really bad for the left. Yeah, the context of what is being said in those documents is, if we can't work out a peaceful solution, this is likely what's going to happen. Because the right is not going to be ruled by the left, and if it comes to war, you know what the rules of war are, which is there are no rules. And whoever wins does whatever the heck they want. And if the right does whatever the heck they want, the left is in big, big trouble. Americans, please listen to me. I do not want this. I am not calling for this. I am predicting it. It is easy to predict. Don't be an ostrich with your head in the sand. Don't pretend it's going to be okay. It won't be okay unless the sane people get together and do something like this. Now you say, do you really think that this is going to happen? I don't know what the chances are. I know the chances of this happening are not 100%, probably not even 50%. But heck, if there's a 5% chance, if there's a 1% chance that we could avoid a war, we have to put this forth. What we're putting forth is supremely reasonable. It allows each side to live the way they want to live in the places where they already live. What could be more reasonable than that? What we propose would avoid a tremendous amount of bloodshed. There's a very real possibility that America could see the bloodiest civil war in the history of the world. Because the right wing has already seen communism destroy 100 million, kill 100 million people and destroy the lives of a billion in the 20th century. The entire right wing, even those who don't pay that much attention politically, already knows that this is the same exact movie with slightly changed names. The right wing knows this, and if you're a left winger, you need to understand that that is what the right wingers are thinking, and the right wingers are not going to have any of it. They're not going to allow it. And they have the means to not allow it. What we propose is being offered in good faith. We are genuine. If you oppose our peace proposal, you have no moral standing. What could be more reasonable than allowing people to live they want to live, people to live the way they want to live in the places where they already live, separating by geography and political, basically voting patterns, and letting people build the polities that they want to build, and reaping the consequences and the benefits of what they do. If the left-wingers believe their way is better, then fine, do it your way. Let's watch and see for the next few decades. Same with the right wing. If you oppose this peace proposal, you have no moral standing. If you oppose our July 4th gathering and what we're doing there, trying to bring forth a peaceful proposal, the only chance for peace for America, you are a warmongering person and you are utterly evil. Because we're trying to avoid war. We're the adults in the room. We are not going to Richmond to shove our will or our political views on others. Sometimes left-wingers start looking at our political views and they say, these people are right-wingers. Sometimes they falsely accuse us of being Nazis. We are not even close to being Nazis. They call anybody that's right of Bernie Sanders a Nazi. We all know this. But even if we were Nazis, we're not coming to shove our will or our political views on other people. We're saying let's separate because otherwise it's going to be a bad scene. Left-wingers, if you refuse to, when I say compromise, I don't mean you have to give into what we want in every way. I mean, just if you refuse to consider separating from us geographically, just dividing by the places where we already live, if you refuse to consider that, then it's easy to predict there's going to be a war, you're going to lose, and a lot of people on every side are going to get hurt. And I understand it's hard for you left-wingers to compromise because you view the right-wing as evil. We understand scientifically why you view right-wingers as evil. I'm not going to explain it here. We're not evil, but we understand why you view us that way. But you have to understand you can't beat us. And if you refuse to just separate and do the common sense thing, the sane thing, a lot of people are going to get hurt because the right is never going to allow you to rule over them. Left-wingers, do you really believe you can convince the right wing to accept your demands? Ask yourself this question honestly if you're a left-winger. Do you really believe you can convince the right wing to accept your demands? Do you really believe that? That you can get them to just give you everything you want? Do you really believe that your strategy of demonizing white people is going to work? I mean, think about going into China and saying, we're going to have a strategy of just calling the Chinese people evil over and over and over again and see what we can get out of it. It wouldn't work at all with them. On white people, for reasons we understand scientifically as well, it works to a point and then it stops working. You really think your strategy, if you need to give us power because we say so, and by the way, you're evil, do you think that's really going to work? What group of people in the history of the world has ever given up power just because some other group says so or demonizes them? Do you really think that strategy is going to work? Do you think your strategy of demonizing Western civilization is going to work? Demonizing the civilization that brought humanity out of ignorance, poverty, and disease almost single-handedly. And if you say, oh, that's not true, you're lying. Do you really think your strategy of tearing down the greatest thing the earth has ever seen, despite its many imperfections, is going to work? It's like if there's only one boat in the ocean that works and you want to poke holes in it because it doesn't fit your view perfectly, do you think the rest of the people in that boat are going to be like, yeah, go ahead, you know, punch a bunch of holes in the bottom of this boat? Now they're going to say, this is the only boat we got. Do you really believe you can rule the right wing politically without a war? Do you really believe you can, if you start winning all the elections, which you would soon, if things just kept going, without some kind of a, you know, further conflict, Do you really think if you were to start winning all the elections that the right wing is just going to go along with it and with what you want without putting up a fight? I mean, you can make that bet if you want, but you're going to be wrong. That's my prediction. Do you really believe you can win a war against the right wing? Think about the risk you're taking. Left wingers, do you want a war? We don't. When I say we, I mean myself. I mean the people I'm involved with. I mean the right wingers. And we're proving it by putting forth a good faith solution that works for everybody, except for a handful of elites that nobody likes anyway. We don't want a war. We just accurately point out who would win it. That doesn't mean we're calling for it or we want it. And we accurately point out that there's only one way to avoid it. We are the only group offering a solution. Everyone else is whining and complaining and yelling at the other side, which accomplishes absolutely nothing. If America doesn't appreciate us, at least if a critical mass of Americans don't appreciate us, well, America deserves what's coming. And a lot of people do appreciate us, which is why we're, basically starting from scratch like a year ago as far as publicity and everything. I don't know how to describe what level of publicity we're at, but we're getting a lot of traction because it makes so much sense. We are the only group attempting to broker peace instead of shouting in vain at the other side. We are the only group that explains each side scientifically. For example, we explained that the left is absolutely correct to be scared of being left behind. Now, I don't agree with the left's proposed quote-unquote solutions, which is to tear everything down and to demand a bunch of free stuff from people who don't want to give them free stuff. I don't agree with their proposed solution for the problem, which is basically theft and demanding free stuff from people. Like, as if that's going to work. But the left, the grassroots left, is absolutely correct that there are many, many people on this planet that are in danger of being left behind by modern civilization. That is an absolutely correct fear. The average IQ on this planet is 85, folks. Somewhere in that range. The combination of the Industrial Revolution, the Scientific Revolution, the Technological Revolution has left a huge portion of the people of this planet behind. There's not much that they can do to add value in a modern economy because it's knowledge-based. There's only so much manual work to go around. And please understand, I'm not demonizing manual work. I'm not saying... See, one of the secrets of Western civilization is once you really get it, like if you do your job, you have status. Your status and your respect is not based on being highest on the totem pole. It's based on doing your job. But the left cannot handle doing a job that is not and having their group being on average lower status than other groups or as an individual. They're very afraid of being left behind. And this is a very real problem in the world. They are identifying that problem correctly. They just lie about the reason for it. They say it's because other people are oppressing them. The reality is because there's a lot of people on this planet that genuinely have a hard time adding value in a modern economy that is built around technology and high engineering and it's hard to get ahead unless you have a certain kind of baseline IQ and baseline conscientiousness. And there's billions of people on this planet that aren't at that level. But they're not wrong to be afraid. The right is absolutely correct to be scared of what the left is proposing as a solution, which is to tear down Western civilization and demonize white people and just basically do communism 2.0 or 3.0 or whatever the heck it is. It's actually communism probably 10.0 if you look back over the last few thousand years. It's the same exact dynamic over and over again in history. Western civilization makes an advance. The people that are afraid of being left behind, correctly so, get freaked out and they have basically a counter revolution to that. and it drags a civilization down, and every great civilization gets dragged down by the sheer weight of the parasitism and the sheer weight of the people who are afraid of being left behind. We know how to fix this whole problem, but we can't even... The smart right knows how to fix this problem, but we can't even express it to the people without everybody shouting at us. See? So we have to separate now. And then if we separate, the right wing can try certain things its way. I mean, I don't want people starving in the streets. I don't want people to suffer. There's a way to help these people and to shepherd the world forward. We adults know how to do it, but we got so many children running with scissors and stabbing at everybody that we can't even get in a word edgewise to fix the problem. We know how to fix it. The right is absolutely correct to be scared of communism, whatever version it is, which is what we're seeing an explosion of. The right and the left are absolutely correct to be angry at the elites, the establishment, frustrated with the system. So again, if you oppose our peace proposal, you have no moral standing whatsoever. If you lie about our peace proposal and propose system changes, like I talked about earlier, if you don't do your due diligence and actually understand what we're proposing, and you make false claims about it, you are a warmongering person and you are evil. You are causing a lot of people to be hurt by lying. If you oppose our July 4th gathering, or if you try to disrupt it, or if you attack it in any way, you are a warmongering, evil person. We are offering a peaceful solution in good faith. We are not going there to cause trouble. If anybody causes trouble at that gathering, we will assume them to either be an outright enemy or a Fed. Do not show up with a Nazi flag. Please don't show up with a Confederate flag. We don't want to confuse the messaging here. We want to have a very simple message. Let's make some system changes that will actually work for everybody. And make everybody of the normal people a lot happier. We are not going there to start a fight. And we are not proposing this to start a fight. We're doing it to avoid a fight. We propose peace. Join us on July 4th in Richmond, Virginia. If you can't be there, watch the live stream on my channel. We'll keep you informed as we get closer to the date. Folks, Civil War II in America has already begun by many counts, and there's only one way to stop it. We are proposing that one way to stop it. For the love of your loved ones, of your life, for the love of your fellow Americans, for the love of our civilization, don't fight against us when we're proposing this. Don't lie about us. Don't attack us. Even if you disagree with our political views, fine. That's the whole reason we're proposing this. So that people with different political views can go their own way. And you don't have to worry about us shoving our will down your throat. And the other way around. Love you all. Until next time.